Thank you, operator, and thank all of you for jumping on the call. I know that there have already been a couple of calls on the RFS program today that many of you have probably been on, so I appreciate you joining us. This is our second in what will be a series, and this one is going to focus on the impact of agriculture and rural economies from EPA's proposed reduction in the 2014 RVO. Now, you all know that there are many policy objectives that are met with the RFS, energy security for sure, and we've seen a dramatic reduction in our dependence on imported oil from 60% when the 2005 bill was passed to just 41% today because of the RFS, because of the growth in ethanol. Environmental benefits, absolutely. The RFS is really the only fuels-related program that requires reductions in carbon dioxide and helping to address climate change. It certainly had an impact on consumers in reducing the price of gasoline, as ethanol is so much less expensive than gasoline is today. But revitalizing rural communities, boosting farm income, and reducing farm program costs were also important policy objectives of the RFS. $2 corn had been unsustainable. Congress was looking for value-added programs that would allow farmers to get more of their income from the marketplace than from the federal government in the mailbox. And the RFS has certainly helped to do that. And this proposal will reverse that policy as well. And there is nobody better to talk about the rural economic benefits of a thriving ethanol industry than Governor Terry Branstad of Iowa. He sees it throughout his state every day. He has been a strong proponent of value-added agriculture generally and ethanol specifically throughout his tenure as governor. And I am very pleased that he was able to join us today. Governor Branstad, thank you very much. And why don't you give some thoughts?
Well, Bob, thank you for this opportunity. I'm very proud to be governor of Iowa, the number one corn and soybean producing state. We're also the number one ethanol and biodiesel producing state. We're also a major producer of wind energy as well. We have 41 ethanol plants in the state. We have 13 biodiesel plants. I was involved in the 1970s as a state representative to encourage renewable fuels when it was in its infancy, and it's really grown. Thanks to the RFS, dramatic progress has been made in recent years, as you pointed out, reducing our dependency on foreign oil and revitalizing our rural communities. Now, I was governor before for 16 years in the 80s and 90s. So I was governor during the farm crisis of the 80s when land values dropped 63% and we closed 38 banks in this state. I know what can happen when you have agriculture depression, and we don't want to go back and revisit that. This proposal from the EPA could cost 45,000 jobs nationally. That's 45,000 families that would face undue financial hardship, stress, and it's not just the farmers, it's and the jobs in the ethanol plants. When then land values start dropping, farmers quit buying equipment, and that means that we're going to have layoffs in farm manufacturing, in companies like Kinsey Manufacturing that makes corn planters and gravity wagons, in companies like Hagee Manufacturing that makes sprayers for corn crops, in companies like Sukup that makes grain dryers and grain bins. These are all small Iowa companies that have been growing and doing well that would be damaged by this. It's estimated that this will drive down the price of corn by another 25 cents. We've already seen the price of corn drop from $8 back during the drought of last year to close to $4 today, which today at today's cost of hybrid seed and fertilizer is below the cost of production. So we have a program here, the RFS, that has worked well, that has really helped revitalize rural America. The Midwest and the agriculture production states have led the economic comeback in this country. We have made a real difference, and, you know, I would remind people, because I lived through this before, the 1990 Clean Air Act required a use of oxygenated fuel in certain areas of the United States. The oil companies said, oh, no, you don't need to use ethanol. We got another product called MTBE. And they were able to convince people in the East Coast and the West Coast to use that instead of ethanol. We in the Midwest champion ethanol, and it worked well for us. But they used MTBA, and what did it lead to? Poisoning of the groundwater in California and in East Coast states. And obviously that was a disaster, and MTBA was then eventually banned. And here are the oil companies again trying to say, oh, no, you can't use ethanol. Well, they were wrong when they promoted MTBE. They're wrong again when they said ethanol couldn't fill the bill, and we've been able to do that. And now, of course, they're resisting because they don't want something they don't control. They want something that they're only going to profit from, not something that's going to benefit the economy of this entire agricultural heartland of America. In fact, the decision the EPA is going to make will have dramatic implications on the economic viability of communities all across this Midwest agricultural heartland. And I'm concerned that this would be devastating to what has been a robust economic recovery here in the strongest region of the United States. And I would just urge the President and Administrator Gina McCarthy to continue the support of a robust and strong renewable fuel standard that the EPA has always supported to this date. And there's no reason why they should flinch under the pressure of big oil at this critical time. We need to continue the progress and the growth that has occurred and the benefit that this has to revitalizing rural America.
Thank you very much, Governor. I'd now like to ask Matt Erickson, who's an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, to make some comments as well. Matt?
Thank you, Bob, and thanks to RFA for allowing AFBF to be on the call, and I'd like to thank the reporters for being on the call, too, for this very important topic. To start off, before I get into my comments, we are very disappointed in EPA's proposed reduction in the amount of renewable fuels that must be blended into the nation's gasoline supply. The way we look at this, and this will definitely strike a blow to conventional ethanol production, as well as dampen the prospects for advanced biofuels now and in the future. And when we really look at the renewable fuel standard right now, we really view this as a success story for the agricultural economy. And if you look at kind of the ag economy since 2007, when the RFS2 was put into place, we've seen tremendous growth within the agricultural sector. We've seen ag exports increase by 57%. We've seen total livestock output increase by 31%. And we've seen total crop output increase by 44%. And if you look at the economics right now, specifically looking at the corn numbers and the corn balance sheets, we're expected to produce a lot of corn this year. Farmers, went up to the challenge, and we're going to be producing a lot of corn this year at approximately 14 billion bushels, which is up from 30% from what we saw last year during the 2012 drought. And if we realize this expectation, this will be a new record level production for the United States. And when we talk about production numbers, it's important that we talk about yields as well. And yields are expected this year, based on conditions as of November 1st, to be 160.4 bushels per acre for the 2013-2014 crop year. And just by means of comparison, you know, planting and harvesting this amount of corn is nothing new. And, you know, one thing that we need to kind of compare to, you know, look at 80 years ago, back to 1933. U.S. farmers planted 109.8 million acres of corn. However, they only yielded 22.8 bushels per acre. So we've come far and along to produce, you know, the corn to meet the demands of the U.S. and all industries involved. if we look at, if we, continuing looking at what this could do, EPA's proposed rule would do for 2014, this would essentially shed over 500 million bushels from corn demand if this proposal were to be finalized, which would ultimately make ethanol exports the key ingredient to make up this lost demand because of the proposed rule that EPA put out for 2014. But I kind of want to go, one of the big things that was a concern last year for our members was the drought. And to be very clear on this, you know, from what we saw and why we saw $8.50 corn, it was due to the drought. It was not due to the renewable fuel standard. It was really, it was because of the drought that we had this issue in corn prices. And comparing last year to this year, it's really a tale of two different stories. You know, we experienced the worst drought since the 1930s, and this cut output and this sent, you know, prices to record levels of $8.50 per bushel. Now, if you look at right now with the 14 billion bushel corn crop, now we're seeing nearby corn futures as of yesterday at about $4.32 a bushel. So from last summer to right now, you know, we've seen corn prices fall by approximately 97%. So that's one area that's really important and something that we're keeping in mind. On the topic of corn prices, it's also important that to note that this effect of the proposed rule does have an effect on corn prices. You know, kind of looking at the markets and what they did since the leak of the proposed rule on October 10th, nearby futures for corn dropped 24 cents a bushel from $4.55 to just over $4.32 a bushel, which was about a 5% reduction. But when we look at the complex between what futures prices are doing for corn and soybeans right now and what this means for farm income, it will definitely have a softer appeal to it next year, because the bottom line with this, folks, is we won't be starting the year off with $6 corn. It will be $4. And the question that we need to be thinking right now is, you know, will 2014 be the year where production costs lag behind decreasing commodity prices? And kind of just looking at some industry estimates, you know, you can see corn prices, or farm prices for corn, which is important to note, farm prices for corn ranging anywhere between $3.95 to $4.15 a bushel. Now, that's given if we, you know, have what we're expected to produce, barring any unexpected events such as a drought or a flood. And if you look at these expected or these forecasted prices and the farm price for corn, and you look at USDA's cost of production forecast from a national level, and again, this is from a national level because, you know, this could vary highly between, you know, farm to farm, state to state, you know, region to region as well. But looking at USDA's cost of production forecast, you know, their break even for corn for 2014 is forecasted to be over $4 a bushel. So if farmers aren't careful, you know, very careful, you could see the break-even price become, or the break-even price for cost of production over that to the farm price that corn farmers could receive for 2014. And really, this would really be the first time we've seen this from a national scale since 2005. Another success story, you know, that we really look at this, you know, we have to understand that crude oil affects everyone. It affects row crop producers, it affects livestock producers, it affects, you know, you and I as consumers. And, you know, one of the things that we also need to consider is the U.S. economy and the global economy is very energy intensive. And one of the success stories that we see and our members see is that, you know, crude oil imports have decreased from 60% down to 40% since 2007. So that's a tremendous success story. However, we have a long way to go with this because the U.S. is still affected by swings in oil prices, which are set on world markets. And I want to leave this off here with my comments for something to consider with this. We all have to understand that price spikes in crude oil can lead to large global economic consequences. And this is what I want you to consider with this. During the Arab oil embargo in 1973 and 1974, global crude oil expenses represented 4.5% of world GDP, or gross domestic product. Since 2011, every time this percent has hit over 4.5%, a world recession has occurred. From 1973 to 74, during the Arab oil embargo, annual world oil prices experienced a price shock of over 250%. We saw with the Iran Revolution in 1978 and 1979, an increase of 125% with world crude oil prices. And even in 2007-08, during that recession, we saw crude oil prices spike by 34%. And a lot of these things, you know, from a global front, we can't control. So it's very important that we realize, you know, as a country, we are energy intensive, and it's important for us to move forward and not backward with the renewable fuel standard moving forward.
Thank you, Matt. Operator, if you want to open up to questions now, that'd be terrific.
To ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 to ask an audio question. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Jeff Molly.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I would just ask an open question and an observation. First of all, if the EPA and the administration have made up their mind that they're going to do this, what means do we have, the industry, do you have to stop it? And second, concentration thereby on corn prices. What about prices for consumers for gasoline if you blend less ethanol?
Well, Jeff, let me take the – go ahead, Governor.
I can tell you in the state of Iowa, ethanol blended fuel sells for like 13 to 30 cents a gallon less than regular gasoline. Most consumers prefer to use that. We also are doing some experiments with blender pumps where we can use up to 30%, and we do have some flexible fuel vehicles that use 85%, and 85% ethanol sells from between $50 to $1 less than regular gasoline. So I think what happens, this will drive up the price of gasoline for the consumers as it drives down profitability for agriculture and costs us a lot of jobs.
And Jeff, I would just say that in terms of what people can do, this is just a proposed rule right now. There's a hearing tomorrow. I know that Governor Branstad is going to be testifying at that hearing. I will be at that hearing. There are 144 speakers that EPA already knows are going to be providing their perspective on this proposal. And then there'll be a 60-day comment period. And at the we expect lots of people to comment on it. And I am very hopeful that EPA listens to Governor Branstad tomorrow, listens to other stakeholders that are concerned about the impact of their proposal on the rural economy, on consumers across this country, on our energy and environmental security, and changes the rule. That's why we're having this call, because we want people to know that there is still an opportunity to change this rule, but they need to comment to EPA. They need to let the president know that they're on the wrong course with this proposal. They need to return the RFS to what it was intended to be under the statute, and I am hopeful that through that process we'll get a final rule that shows a bit more fidelity to the statute and is more sensitive to consumers across this country.
I'm also going to remind the president that Iowa launched his campaign for the White House, and he was a supporter of renewable fuels. He ran against John McCain, who wasn't. He beat John McCain in Iowa because of that. That was one of the factors, anyway, that played in the election. And I think the president has made a terrible mistake caving into big oil on this issue. I think that the administration and the EPA needs to listen to the grassroots here in the agricultural heartland of America, where the president began his ascendancy to the White House. We have established we have a website now called ProtectTheRFS.com. And we just launched this about a week ago, but we're getting a lot of interest in this, and I would encourage anybody to go on that website and make their comments. I'm going to share that information with the EPA, but protect the RFS.com. And our entire congressional delegation, Republicans and Democrats from Iowa, are all opposed to this change in the renewable fuel standard. And we believe it would be devastating to a state that has been a real leader in making a difference. And it's been very important to employment of people in the rural communities in our state. So I feel very strongly about this. I lived through the farm crisis. I don't want to go back to falling land prices and farm machinery dealers going out of business and farm machinery manufacturers laying people off again. We lived through that in the 80s. We don't want to go back there. This could send us in that direction.
Thank you.
Amen.
Your next question comes on the line of Zach Coleman.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just wanted to know, a lot of reporters here in D.C. just got out of a meeting with API and Associated Interests. They seem to think that the legislative option on the RFS is still in play. I want to know what you all think about what the EPA volume changes did to the legislative push on the RFS. Did it embolden it? Did it soften it? And, you know, on top of that, what do you plan on doing in Congress?
Well, this is Bob Dineen. We certainly are going to continue to oppose legislative action. I quite frankly think a lot of the momentum on legislation had already lost some steam before the RVO was released, because I think members are finding out just how difficult it is to tweak or reform a program that was so carefully crafted in 2005 and 2007. One thing that I think is instructive is that, repealing the program altogether seems to be off the table. The chairman of the relative committees have made it pretty clear that that's not something in the offing. We believe strongly that EPA has authority to address some of the issues that have been raised with respect to the RFS. We think, for example, some more transparency on RIN trading would be extraordinarily helpful. We don't think, however, that the agency can be creating legislative authority where it doesn't exist, and that's where we think they've overstepped here. But bottom line is, look, the oil companies are well-funded, and they are highly motivated to repeal this program because they don't like the competition from ethanol. So we know that legislative attacks are going to continue, but I don't think they'll be successful, and we will continue to oppose. You know, Governor Branstad certainly has had lots of experience with oil companies trying to keep competition from happening and trying to hold on to their market share, but ultimately, I think the Congress will do what's in the best interest of consumers across the country, and that is continuing the march forward on our energy policy.
Right, but at the same time, that is, it's not just the oil companies here. You had, National Turkey Federation, National Chicken Council. You have the restaurants. You have, the marine manufacturers, you have all these other interests for whatever reason opposing the RFS.
It's oil money behind all of this, and the oil companies tried to bamboozle the American public with MTBE as an alternative to ethanol before. They poisoned the groundwater. They have a lot of money, and they have a lot of resources, and they've been able to fool a lot of people before, but I don't think they should get by with fooling people again. Let's just go back and look at the history of what they did with MTBE, because they so abhorred the idea of competition from renewable fuel. We can't let them get by with this again. They poisoned the groundwater once, and they just want to poison the well again. I think that's wrong.
Your next question comes from the line of John Siciliano.
Hi, guys. Bob, I was just trying to figure out if there's anything in the proposed ranges, you know, EPA has a set volume requirement, and then it proposes ranges with a lower number and higher number. I'm just trying to make heads or tails. No one's really responding to that necessarily, but what is the thinking, or your thoughts about the thinking that EPA is using here and designing a standard that could be altered one way or another, or, you know, play up the advanced biofuels to a certain level while it might encourage advanced, it might put downward pressure again on the conventional side. I was just trying to figure out what do you guys see in that that's beneficial. But also, there was also a new lawsuit on E15 that was at the API meeting was mentioned. It was filed yesterday. I was wondering if you had any concerns about that.
Let me take the lawsuit first. I actually had not seen that there's a new suit filed, so we'll take a look at it and get back to you. With respect to EPA's proposal, yeah, they have asked for comment on a range of volumes. To me, that just builds more uncertainty into this program. And if you are somebody looking to invest in cellulosic ethanol or another advanced biofuel, the one thing that you don't need is uncertainty. Well, there's nothing but uncertainty with this proposal. Now, I do think that they'll finalize something that doesn't necessarily include a range, because you can't practically implement that. But to me, it's not so much about whatever the number is. To me, this is about whether or not the RIN system itself is going to have value. If EPA is going to allow the credit system to do its job, and the RINs are intended to drive investment in cellulosic ethanol, to drive innovation in ethanol marketing so that you're adding value, so you get somebody over the hump, whether they are going to offer E15 or put in an infrastructure for E85. And by ripping out that value proposition with this proposal, they're essentially taking the RFS and putting it in the hands of ExxonMobil and other oil companies and saying, you tell us what you're comfortable blending, and we'll set the target there. Well, the RFS was not passed to be convenient for the oil companies. The RFS was passed to make them uncomfortable, to make the marketplace do things that the oil companies would not do otherwise, to force E85 into the marketplace, to force higher-level blends, to create incentives for new technologies, new biofuels, new feedstocks, to move this country forward, and this proposal takes our country backwards.
One of the reasons I ran for governor was to restore stability and predictability in our state, and that's exactly what the RFS has done. It has given us stability and predictability, and we know that we have a growing market for renewable fuels, and the American farmers have responded, and we have the ability. Yes, we had a little blip last year because of that nationwide drought, but the question, there's no doubt we can produce plenty of corn and soybeans that we need, and just now the cellulosic ethanol plants are under construction. We have three of them in Iowa, and they need some time, but it's a great new opportunity that's coming down the road, and this would be a huge setback and could set us back decades and reverse our progress on reducing our dependency on foreign oil.
Okay, thanks.
Again, to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Bobby Lee.
This is Bobby Likas, and I have a question for Bob Dineen and also for Governor Branstad. Bob, you mentioned that the EPA is a proposal. Is it not a requirement that the EPA show harm to American consumers before it can force the proposal? I mean, isn't that necessary for the proposal to go forward?
Well, what they are doing here is two things. One, they are releasing their RVO, the required volumes for obligated parties for 2014. That's a standard thing that they do. They're just putting out the numbers. Now, because they are reducing the overall RFS for the very first time, they also have to issue a waiver in the same rulemaking, and the waiver really has two tests. One would be to show severe economic harm, which they cannot possibly do, given that ethanol is so much less expensive than is gasoline today. And the other would be if there's not enough supply. Well, there's certainly more than enough supply of ethanol, and so what they've tried to suggest is that you can't get all that supply into the motor fuel market, but that ignores the fact that you can most certainly blend more E85. You can certainly get more ethanol into the marketplace with E15, other mid-level blends, if EPA allows the program to move forward. But they certainly will have to evaluate those issues prior to promulgating this in a final form.
Thank you. And I have a question for Governor Branstad. First, I'd like to make a statement that the car makers are spending millions, if not billions, of dollars bringing smaller, high-compression engines to the market so they can provide higher MPG and lower tailpipe emissions. And given that ethanol's high-octane properties are a proven fit and cost the consumer less dollars at the pump, Governor, I understand you're testifying tomorrow, and thank you very much. You mentioned MTBE and groundwater pollution. Don't we need to be asking them a question, if not ethanol, what and at what cost to financial and health to American consumers?
Well, that's a very good point. The truth is that what the oil companies have done is a cost to the American consumers and to American health, and that's the reason why this whole movement for better, cleaner fuel and more oxygenate came about. And I don't know, but I've been around in this business for a long time, and they find one excuse after another, and it's really all got to do about profit. They want to control it, and they want to make the profit. And I believe that that is certainly is not in the national interest of this country, and certainly it's not in the interest of the consumers of my state or the producers and the workers that have been benefited from the RFS and the growth and the progress that we've made. So I just think that we're at a critical stage here, and they saw this opportunity to try to really block the growth of renewable fuels, and they've gone all out in terms of their spending and public relations. But I would just point to the country of Brazil. Brazil, almost all the vehicles there are flexible fuel vehicles, and they have become totally energy independent. And they're a good example of how it can be done and how it should be done. And virtually all the vehicles there are flexible fuel vehicles. That's what we should have in this country. It costs virtually no more to make a flexible fuel vehicle than not, so all of the new ones should be.
And there's no further audio questions at this time. I would like to turn it back over to Mr. Bob Dineen for closing remarks.
Thank you, Operator. I'd like to thank Governor Branstad, certainly thank Matt as well from the Farm Bureau, but thank each of you for being on this call. I know that there's lots of issues that you need to follow, but this is a very important one. We obviously feel very deeply about it. There's going to be great hearing at EPA tomorrow, and we'll have comments as well. But thank you all very much. Governor, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.